This episode of Addiction, an Hour with Hour, is brought to you by Gaming Laboratories International. GLI is a world-class testing, inspections, and certification company committed to delivering the highest quality land-based lottery and iGaming testing and assessment services around the world. GLI provides suppliers, operators, and regulators with expert guidance for navigating the future of gaming and ensuring gaming innovations meet regulatory standards with confidence in more than 710 jurisdictions. For more information, visit gaminglabs.com. Welcome to another episode of Addiction, an Hour with Hour. We are joined by our esteemed host, Dr. Michael Hour.
That's a stretch. Oh, I thought you were talking about me. He is esteemed.
Yeah, he's totally esteemed.
You can be too if you want. I mean,
it's a self-appointed title. He told me he's esteemed.
Yes.
Just before he told me that he's in a bad mood today.
Well, we're going to make everybody in a good mood.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
We'll see. Dr. Michael Hour, I'm his co-host, comedy sidekick, whatever, John Bruford, and we're joined by the excellent Brendan Busman, who is the principal of B Global Regulatory Consultancy. Brendan, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me on.
It's our pleasure. Now, I asked you on here for a very specific conversation, but these things mutate as you go. When I said to Michael, hey, we should ask Brendan on, he was like, why would we do that?
I'm not. So
why
sure
not?
I don't like the sound of him. obviously, I'm kidding. But he's like, okay, who is he? What does he do? Why? And I said, well, Brendan can speak with great confidence and fluency on the way that regulators work and the way that they approach regulation. And I thought it would be very interesting. So on the podcast, we're discussing addiction, but... from sort of a holistic sort of viewpoint. So we look at something if it's interesting. I think, is that fair? Great Grand Poobah.
Not sure. You're looking at both of us, I think.
No, that's just a
no, that was
funny eyes.
You, I think.
To the void of the camera. Yeah, sure, of course. So Brendan, I assume you're mostly involved with gambling regulation, correct?
For the most part, but obviously that spills into other things depending on the development and, you know, other types of things because, you know, while gaming regulation typically stays with a gaming regulator, there are obviously laws and codes and other things as it relates to developments and other things along the way that come into play as you're doing developments, whether it be anything from online to land-based, as well as some of the other things I do when it comes to hospitality and sports, but mostly on the gaming front.
I mean, I picked up on that because that's I'm quite sensitive to terminology. You always say gaming, so like, but you mean gambling, right? I mean, we're not talking about video gaming or something like this.
Correct. Yes. Gambling, yes.
Like money, yes. Games of chance with, like, you know, money in, money out.
Games of chance, games of skill, for the most part. Yes, that type of gaming / gambling.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Just to be clear, we're not talking about video gaming or anything like that.
No. I mean, there's an element to that on some people that want to bet like on esports, but no, I'm not dealing with the those types of topics for the most part.
It's funny you should bring that up, Michael, because it's something that the industry is very often criticized for.
Yeah.
Is the interchangeable use of that term. And yeah, the industry like is used interchangeably.
I don't like it either, yeah.
Because it's ambiguous.
In English, it's kind of similar, right? I mean, it's a language thing too. In German, okay, I mean, it could also be similar, but usually you would put like another word in front. It's called the Glücksspiel, you know, Glück, luck, game. And Spiel yep. would be like to play, you know, for fun or on the playground or whatever. But I think in English it's specific because also, but when I, you know, lately I read lots of regulations from the different states, and you call in the US, I mean, you refer to, I mean, that's at least how I perceived it. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong. They refer to iGaming when they talk about casino, online casino gambling,
correct.
Slots, yes. roulette. And then they use another terminology for sports, don't they?
Typically, sports is sports betting.
Yeah,
unless you're in the prediction market business, which
yeah, okay.
that's a whole different story along the way, and we can talk about that too. But you know, sports is typically sports. They'll refer to it as online sports betting for the digital device type stuff, or OSB for short. But yeah, it's iGaming. It's, you know, but some places call it iCasino versus iLottery and those types of things, depending on who the licensee is in the process.
Mm. Well, that was quite complicated to start with.
No, I think it's interesting, you know, because every country does it a little bit differently, don't they? And in the US, every state. So how many of the US states now have introduced online casino gambling? That's not so many, is it?
No. With regard to iGaming, and I'll put it in that terms because there's more states that have iLottery type thing, a few more. There are only a handful of states that have actually done that, a little over a handful, actually, as I should say that. You've got New Jersey, you've got West Virginia, you've got Michigan, and a host of others that in Pennsylvania are probably the leading ones off of that in what that looks like. Nevada is one of the ones that is, I'll call it, we only have online poker. We don't have online full, you know, casino and anything of that nature. It's solely focused on poker. But, you know, as you go into that... that you look at what may be coming down the pipeline too, and obviously there's always bills throughout legislatures of whether they are or aren't going to expand upon those accordingly. So,
and all of the states which have introduced online sports betting, now the other way around, like the ones which have introduced iGaming have also introduced online sports betting, or
correct? Yes,
yeah.
Yes. You've got roughly now 40 states with DC and Puerto Rico included in there that have online sport have sports betting. Let me say it that way. Out of those, a good majority of those are also online. In being able to do that, you have some states that just have land-based. Sports betting, like a Mississippi, like a Nebraska, but back to those that I've mentioned, a Pennsylvania, Michigan, and New Jersey, you know, those are all full online sports betting, as well as, in this case, also having iGaming.
And what are the differences in regulation? So let's say between New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, I mean, the ones which have introduced iGaming, online sports betting. So are there any differences, like from an operator point of view, what you can do?
For the most part, on those three states, it's pretty similar in the nature of the regulatory structure. Mm-hmm. And as I always say that, and some U.S. states have been very good about this. Other states have said, hey, let's start and reinvent the wheel, as they did the whole sports betting conundrum over the last, well, let's see. We're talking about the repeal of PASPA, but this will be 8 years in May. since this became a movement over here in the United States. But for the most part, regulatory, it's the same with the iGaming and sports betting because it's full online and being able to do that. Where you get into the particulars on sports betting is some of those states that are land-based only still. And then in other states, of which there are two, you've got still in-person registration where you have to physically go to a location. They want to see the whites of your eyes before you can bet on sports, and then you can go from there. But you have that one step before.
And why do you think, I mean, some states introduce online casino, I casino or sports betting, and some did not. I mean, ultimately, it's the same people, right, across.
It is, and I mean, it's sort of been an evolution of how things have gone. And I say that saying, let's take a look at New Jersey. New Jersey legalized I casino, I gaming, whatever you want to call it, back in I think it was 13 initially, and then it solely implemented it, put it into place. Where it really took off was after sports betting became legal in 18, with the repeal of PASPA. To be able to do it. Since then, it's somewhat been reversed, unless you've done an omnibus bill that included everything. And I say that saying, like a Pennsylvania and a Michigan, they went and said, we're going all in and we're going to do this all at once, as opposed to saying, let's just go into sports and then we'll figure out the iGaming portion later. So states have looked at it differently, especially in a, I'll call it a post-PASPA era that exists. And I say that from the standpoint of sports became the easier method to move across the legislative playing field, if you want to call it that. And being able to take and move that in a fashion that allowed for legislators to say, hey, this is commonplace and being able to do this, versus, hey, I want to be able to say, I can bet on a phone. And do that from a blackjack or a slots or anything else perspective, and being able to do that. So it was very much a mentality. I would argue it also becomes, and we've seen this in the industry, at least in the States before, as you've seen the expansion of casino gaming from a land-based perspective. And I say that saying, if you look at the Midwest that first started looking at doing this, it was okay. We're gonna put slots on a riverboat, and the riverboat has to go out and be on a cruise, and you have this 2-hour cruise that goes up and down the river, and then we moored them to the shores, and then all these places are eventually being built as land-based facilities. But it also went from, hey, we've got slots, to okay, now we're gonna allow table games like they had in Vegas and Jersey over the course of time. So it's never been one of those that says, and very seldom do you have you had this, hey, let's go all in and do this all at once, as opposed to let's sort of tiptoe into the water and we'll finally get out to the deep end accordingly.
And at B Global, like, what's your role in this process? Like, do you help operators getting licensed, or do you advise regulators, or?
Both along the way. And I say that saying, I've worked on about every side of this in some form or fashion. I shouldn't say every side of the guys that want to do it right. Along the way, I've been, advising regulators on how they could structure their regulatory structure and regulations along the way. I've worked with operators to get licensed, to work on their internal controls, to do all those various things. As well as, obviously one of the topics off of this just in general is some of the responsible gaming programs and what that looks like. But also, getting suppliers into market, doing other things along the way, as well as, at one point establishing a structure to allow for gaming to occur in a new jurisdiction.
Could I ask, right? When And I know we've had a lot of conversations about hypothetical regulations, haven't we?
We
For
have.
other recordings that we have done. But say if I were a let's say let's say for the purposes of this conversation, I am, I don't know, Utah or China.
Okay. That's an interesting combination you just pulled together. Polar opposites, but we'll go with it.
So say I'm one of those places where there is no regulated gambling, right? And we come to you and we say, we've heard good things about you. We heard you on that podcast. We thought you were great. This podcast. At what point, generally, does a new jurisdiction that is looking at regulating gambling, at what point does player protection and RG come into the conversation? Is this something that's like early doors? Are they like, holy shit, we got to look after the players? Or is this something that's like added on to the end to keep everybody quiet? I mean, does anybody take it seriously at a regulatory level?
It depends, and I know that sounds really like I'm not answering the question, but let me give you some examples, because it's a cultural thing, and I say that from the standpoint of, you know, I think we'll use your Utah and China examples along the way. I think, which is a little bit of a stretch, but we'll make it work. I think you'd have it much more earlier in the conversation in a Utah of going, what do we have to do with player protections? What do we have to do with all these things? Because it's part of the overall conversation in the United States. You know, not saying it's not in China if China were ever to legalize on mainland. Because realize your only China experience where it's legal is Macau, which started off as a special administrative region, you know, along the way. So culturally, it becomes one of those, where do I need to have it in the conversation? Where do I think it applies to the conversation to be able to add it into the regulatory structure? I'm going to switch gears a little bit when I say this, but, you know, obviously this was one of the key things they looked at in Singapore, was because they didn't want locals to gamble. They wanted to be able to, you know, have a framework that arguably, you know, had three tiers of self, family and third party exclusion to be able to do it. And that's a jurisdiction that put it first and foremost at part of the regulatory structure. Other places along the way have either, you know, said, hey, we're going to put something in to be able to deal with it. But, you know, it's not front and center focused over what we may or may not need to do. We're concerned with, you know, the overall level playing field we want to create for players and the consumer protections as opposed to the responsible gaming protections.
Well, the reason that I brought Utah into that was because I was wondering about I don't know quite what words to use to put this, but I was wondering about Utah is famously a highly religious state. It's a Mormon state. And that influences public policy to an enormous extent. Generally, is religion an important factor in drafting regulations?
Yes, but I'm going to say it depends. Again, not trying to not answer. But I mean, you look at it going, okay, let's look at, and now we're getting into a philosophical religious debate, and I don't know if we want to go down Catholicism and the Mormon religion and, you know, Church of Latter-day Saints and everything else along the way versus basic Christianity versus, you know, other faiths from around the world. You know, you look at that going, okay, you have people that, and I say this across the board from a Judeo-Christian perspective, I think most people are like, we want to be caring, we're a church, we want to do the right thing, we want to make sure people are taken care of. But then you just sit there and go, okay, where does this fit in the big scheme of things between what do I need to put in for safety nets versus personal responsibility in looking at these types of things? And it's not necessarily a bad thing one way or another, but, you know, you run into, you know, churches that have bingo games in their basements along the way, which clearly are a form of gaming.
Well, I was thinking about that because that was a big factor in Massachusetts, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, you sit there and you go, okay, I've got a raffle, I've got a bingo, I've got other things I may be playing along the way. It's not like most of these places have slots in the basement. You'll have fraternal organizations that do that in some states because they're allowed to over everything, or over the course of time they had a quote-unquote gray machine that now has become legal in most states of what you're looking at. But, you know, this goes why, you know, gaming is always somewhat of a regional play, because you've got all of those cultural significant things, whether it be based off religion or otherwise, in being able to do that.
I see. That was almost an answer. Have you ever thought about going into politics?
Well, that's why I'm good at government affairs.
I can totally see that.
You know, as I always like to say, what did you get out of your degree when I graduated from the University of Nebraska? Which, yes, the N on the side of our helmet stands for knowledge along the way. But I've got a great degree in bullshit, you know.
It's good to see it being put to great use.
Yes, it's a lot of knowledge.
Sorry, Michael.
Can I chip in again? So if we look, you live in Las Vegas, you said before.
Yes.
And like looking back, you know, let's say over the last 10 or 20 years, what are any changes in regulation specifically from, you know, a responsible gaming point of view? Let's say over the last 20 years, did they introduce anything, you know, that they felt might, you know, help, whatever, reduce the risk of problematic gambling?
You mean in Vegas?
In Vegas itself, yeah.
So Vegas is an interesting conundrum as you bring that up. And I think it has much more been driven by the operators than necessarily the regulators. And that's nothing, you know, as a knock on the Nevada Gaming Control Board when I say that. But, you know, the regulatory structure for RG has pretty much stayed consistent. But as the industry has evolved, and some of that coming from other jurisdictions, that you have much more robust, responsible gaming programs than, you know, a brochure next to the ATM that says when the fun stops type thing along the way. You know, I use back, and as you talk about that, I glean back to my days when I worked at Las Vegas Sands, and when in 2010, we put in a global responsible gaming program. And the objective of that was to take our properties at that point in time, which was Las Vegas, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Macau, and Singapore, and say, one, how do we get a comprehensive program that has the fundamentals in place for all four of our jurisdictions, all four very different in what the requirements were, but that we also become proactive in our approach to it, of not just informing patrons of options they may have for self-exclusion. Obviously, I brought up here earlier Singapore as it relates to family and third party that had other things along the way, but also sitting there and educating team members as part of that process to not only understand the warning signs, but also say, hey, if John approaches me on the casino floor, where do I send him, as opposed to saying, hey, I don't know, just figure it out on your own type thing. But then obviously fundamentally also then reinvesting in it, of saying what works, what doesn't, and putting research behind that to say, hey, how are we accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish? Are we or aren't we? And what do we need to do to modify that to continually evolve and make that a true investment, not just in the company, but in the patron?
What about, you know, card-based gambling, you know, registered gambling, I mean, land-based gambling, that's, you know, been discussed for quite some time, and some European countries have completely or partially introduced it. Do you see that, you know, even remotely likely in any of the American states?
You know, I don't anytime soon. And I say that having worked with projects like in Australia, where and in Europe and other places where, you know, you can't go in unless you have the carded play that's out there. Uncarded play still rules the roost here. And where you run into more of a desire to deal with it from a carded play versus an uncarded play structure is more based off of compliance related things than an RG perspective. You know, obviously, it's go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
It's actually interesting, you know, because this year I was in a Caesars property, okay, and I wanted to register for a loyalty card. I didn't manage to do that there as a foreigner, so I was quite surprised that it's kind of not so straightforward to actually get hold of a Caesars loyalty card as a non-American.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, because there's a host of reasons, and I can think of different things along the way of how that needs to roll and how that doesn't, of being able to do that, because obviously a loyalty. A loyalty card becomes a different mechanism, and obviously, you know, using that for responsible gaming information also becomes part of the process now. One of the things that I was going to say before you talked about that was, you know, as you look at online sports betting and iGaming in some of these other states, obviously with the more data that's available, you can sit there and say, okay, hey, the data is showing me, John, I'm just going to use you as an example here, you know, that, hey, John's play is different for some reason along the way. What's going on and how do we need to deal with it type thing, versus, hey, Bussman shows up on the floor every night, plays blackjack. Sometimes he wins a lot, sometimes he doesn't, you know, but he always comes in with $500 and uses that along the way. You know, does he have the means for 500? Is all of a sudden he's betting with 5,000? You know, when you don't have, as you've so talked about, that, you know, a carded play atmosphere, you don't have the data to back that up. But this is where, you know, understanding just in general of how that works with a player, and saying, hey, you know, for those that are trained in the ability to do this, hey, is everything going okay one way or another type thing?
That sort of, you know, made me think of monitoring, you know. I mean, there is, in Australia, there is this, you know, huge discussion about gambling-related harm, right? You know, okay, it's not just the problem gamblers, but it's actually everybody who is kind of negatively affected by gambling, you know, some gamblers, family, partner, whatever. And, like, I mean, have you ever come across actually a regulator asking themselves, okay, what are we actually trying to achieve here, you know? I mean, are we trying to keep problem gambling low? Are we trying to, you know, channelize gambling as much as possible so, you know, our citizens don't gamble offshore? I mean, with respect to the online, I mean, what's actually the goal here, you know? Because, for example, you don't have, for example, in the US, like a nationwide regular prevalence study. So there are no numbers, actually reliable numbers, that will tell us, okay, you know, I mean, last year we had that percentage of problem gamblers, 2 years ago we had that percentage. That's not, doesn't exist in the US. I mean, many other countries it doesn't. Neither.
Great question.
In the UK, they do it, of course, annually. The UK Gambling Commission, you know, commission like a prevalence study annually and with, you know, other questions. But I mean, most countries, including the US, are, you know, navigating completely in the dark.
Well, and I always argue it this way, and I shouldn't say argue is the wrong term, but try to explain it this way. Gaming in the United States is very much of a state-driven exercise. And I say that saying, even as we look at the repeal of PASPA, which is the most recent, I'm going to call it, federal action, even though that action came as a ruling from the courts, basically said states hold the keys to the gaming element, which is why, in part, you haven't seen a national gaming prevalence study or anything on a national level. I mean, what we care about right now at a national level, with the exception of prediction markets, which is a whole ball of wax in itself, is, you know, deductions and tax-related things accordingly. And as it relates to gaming losses and what's being discussed. That said, at a state level, what I always like to explain to everybody else trying to enter the U.S. market is the U.S. is like entering into Europe. Europe, you've got, you know, a host of countries that have their own views and their own policies and their own regulatory structure that, you know, Germany is not the same as Italy, that's not the same as Malta, that's not the same as the UK in being able to look at it. No different than New Jersey is different than Nebraska, that's different than Nevada, or anywhere else in between in how they look and approach things. Now, you know, there are some states that have taken research to the next level. And I say that saying Massachusetts is the one that I would highlight the most, where they go through and say, okay, what are we seeing as part of these rates, and what are we seeing along the ways to say, hey, does this or doesn't this affect what we're doing, and do we need to do anything about it, type thing, versus other states that may not necessarily have ever done a prevalence study in the big scheme of things.
You know, you made a point in there, and it's I get the point that you made, that each state is essentially a country. It's a state.
It's the best analogy you can give,
but
if you're looking at it from the outside.
But
yes,
they all have the same government. They all use the same currency.
We do use the same currency.
They all speak the same language, pretty much.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We're not talking about actual different countries. It would not be that difficult.
But I mean, I think it's not as different as regulation in Europe, right? So I give you an example, okay? So I wrote a paper, which we haven't submitted yet because it's obviously too long. You know, academic papers also have to have a maximum word count, interestingly. And that paper is really long. And what I did is, so I compare the US, Ontario in Canada, Germany, Spain, UK, and the Netherlands player data. And from actual online gambling operators, right? So I know, you know, I have 800,000 US players, etc., etc., 300,000 UK players, etc., etc. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting just to see, okay, what, you know, are they spending different amounts? I mean, of course, you know, I mean, you also have, you know, country, potential level of income, etc., etc. And another thing, you know, which is kind of independent of the money spent, is the concentration of the money spent. So, you know, are US online gambling operators more reliant on a small group of players than, for example, Dutch online gambling operators or German online gambling operators? And why could that be the case? Simply because in some of the European countries, or in most, I would say, there's a focus on maximum money spent. In fact, Germany, as well as the Netherlands, have introduced maximum monthly deposit limits. Those can be exceeded, you know, somehow awkwardly. But in reality, okay, in Germany, a person cannot deposit more than 1,000 euros across all of the, you know, licensed online gambling operators, because additionally, there, all of the online gambling operators are linked to one governmental database. And if John Bruford, you know, was a German resident and created an online gambling account with three of the operators, they would know how much he's spending across all of them. So he can't exceed the 1,000 across all of the operators, right? Which is quite novel across the world, I would say. So, and then I thought, okay, in the US, none of that really exists, right? So somebody can spend $1 million. I mean, there is no, you know, maximum spend limit, etc., etc. And what I did is I checked, okay, the 10% highest spending players, which percentage of the total revenue in a month are they contributing, right? I mean, they call it a Pareto chart, Pareto analysis, just similar, you know, they would sort of look into, you know, your city Henderson's energy consumption and, you know, analyze, okay, are there a few which consume extreme energy, right? And, you know, others not? Do we have like a concentration or something like this? And interestingly, I mean, in many businesses, there is like this kind of uneven distribution. It's not like that everybody contributes the same to the total revenue, but there are some who just, you know, contribute much more than others. And not surprisingly, what I found is that in the US, this reliance on a small group of highly involved players is the highest. And it's the lowest in those much more regulated countries like Spain, the Netherlands, or Germany, which, you know, is kind of interesting. And of course, has to do with the regulation, because when I looked at, you know, those elements which I thought, you know, are relevant with respect to money spent and distribution, none of them are actually in place in the US and in most of the European countries there are. So what I looked at is, for example, is there a stake limit on slots, right? So for example, in the UK, you cannot stake more than £5 on a single spin. You don't have any of this in the US, right, online?
Correct, correct. Now, there have been people that have talked about some of those things, but the U.S. has taken very much of, well, and this goes to a little bit, I'm going to go back to John's point of, well, we have the same government, we use the same currency, we do all this stuff. We're just set up differently. And I say that saying, and John, you can say what you want to, I know where you're going on with that smile and smirk along the way, but, you know, I don't see any U.S. state sitting there saying, hey, we're going to look at your bank account. We're going to look and see at the means to be able to say, hey, you can only deposit X along the way unless you qualify for Y type thing anytime in the near future. And one of the reasons I always give pushback on that too is, why is this industry any different than any other industry in being able to do that? And I say that saying, if I walk into a store in the UK, let's say I go to Harrods, okay? How do I know if I go in and I go buy $20,000 versus of a luxury brand clothing that I can actually afford that in being able to do that? No one sits there and says, hey, I've got to do X along the way. No one sits there and says, hey, I know better than you. The U.S. still very much, at least currently, very much puts the onus on the person and personal responsibility in being able to do that, as opposed to saying, we know better than you and we're going to limit your ability to enjoy a form of entertainment in a responsible way if you are of a responsible ability to do that. And granted, I mean, there are people that are irresponsible in everything they do. Doesn't matter if it's gaming or everything else along the way. John, that wasn't named at you. When I say that, but it's one of those going, at some point you have to put the onus back on the person.
And are you actually familiar with any cases in which a person is kind of, you know, complaining or suing, claiming, you know, they are clearly addicted and the online gambling operator did not, you know, fulfill their duty of care and didn't identify, you know, the person's issue based on their actual obligation of monitoring? Because what that's something that's very, very well required in the US, right? The online gambling operators have to monitor player behavior. It's not like specified in detail what they have to look for, but they have to monitor playing behavior, at least in some states like New Jersey, and find indications of potential problematic gambling. And then a person can very well basically, you know, sue or, you know, complain or whatever if they believe that the online gambling operator didn't do a proper job.
But there was the famous story, and was it the Washington Post? Broke the story about the psychiatrist who
I think the Post did a story as well as the Journal did a story on this along the way.
But she had literally said to them, "I can't pay my mortgage this month." It's, do you know what I mean?
And she was explicit. Yes, she did. But in the same breath, then she also said, "Well, is there something you need to stop and stop doing?" No, I'm okay. Granted, that was early on in the process.
Yeah.
And the courts have yet to go through that whole process. No, yeah. I understand that. It's a very, where do you put the line and onus along the way of saying, hey, you know, if John came to me, John, I'm going to use this again, and you said, hey, I can't pay my mortgage, you know, I'm going to say, okay, he has an issue there. But if you say, hey, do you want me to cut you off? And you're like, no, I'm good. I'm okay. What are you supposed to do in that situation?
Well, the reason that somebody might be saying...
In a state of environment where personal responsibility still exists.
No, personal responsibility overlaps with regulation. Overlaps. Right? It's not one or the other.
Agree.
And the point is not... What are you supposed to say if they say they're okay? Well, you're supposed to look at their play patterns and say, no, hang on a second, you're fucking addicted. Or whatever. Because you have the means to do that. You have that data to hand. I don't think in this instance that an operator can say, yeah, but they said they're okay. Because a player is not analyzing data. A player doesn't have all of that. The player is not going to sit there and think.
In a lot of these states, though, John, this is where I'm going to correct you on that. That player has every sense of data that they have along the way because they have the player history of how many times they've logged on, how many times they've done everything. The same thing they've had along the way to be able to do that. So at some point you have to say, okay, when is enough enough, and put that on. I know where you're at, John, I know where you're trying to go, but this is where there's nothing in there that says, hey, we're just going to cut you dry and call it a day completely to be able to do that.
I have another question, you know, or something I'd like to bring up. New Jersey has introduced like tracking criteria, right? I mean, they are specific. I mean, you're sure you're familiar with those, like somebody who lost whatever 90,000 last 30 days or something like that. I mean, those are really high values. But I mean, there are a couple of criteria. And so do you think that could spill over to the other states? Like, you know, if these sort of criteria become kind of, you know, established and whatever, you know, there might be court rulings or whatever, or they prove to be kind of, you know, useful, then how can other states like ignore those, you know? Wouldn't it be like foreseeable that the other states have to kind of, you know, comply with this, introduce it just because, you know, they are proving useful in New Jersey?
You know, obviously, depending on how a court would potentially rule, may or may not allow for that for a change to exist. And I can hypothesize on that along the way to say, okay, hey, this does this or this does that along the way, and it pushes people to move the needle one way or another. But to the same extent, you have, and I know this isn't completely, you have 40-some plus jurisdictions that have some form of gaming that exists in there, whether that be, you know, a state like New Jersey that has land-based and online and everything along the way, versus a state like Nevada where, you know, we have our online product is limited to poker type thing. You look at a Jersey standard, Nevada standard, they're completely different in a lot of aspects. You look at other things along the way where rulings have gone. Jersey's done one thing, Nevada's done another along the way, and how they structure stuff and how they look at stuff. So, you know, it's no different than, as I'm going to say, and yes, I know it's a little bit apples and oranges to some extent, but it's no different than Europe of saying, okay, if Denmark finds X along the way, you know, does that mean that the UK is automatically going to pick that up and change it? It doesn't.
Yeah,
you know,
you're absolutely right, you know, because, I mean, in Europe, regulation is extremely hybrid, you know, and
Yeah.
So my thinking is, I ask myself why, and the only reason I can potentially come up with is because we have no idea about, there is obviously not enough research out there, or not, research is not conclusive enough to come up, with one kind of rule set. Although there is, I give you an example. So in most of the most European countries, at least the five that I mentioned before, operators have to provide players the possibility to set the limit, okay? And in most cases, players have to set the limit when they register or they receive a limit from the operator, and they can change it, going along. In the US, the online gambling operators do not even have to provide their players the possibility to set the limit, research is pretty, conclusive here that the limits make sense, what I mean? It's better to have limits than not. Let's put it that way, okay? If somebody said limits can even, worsen play, that's complete nonsense, okay? So if limits are there, they help. They might not help, 100%, but, they at least don't make things worse. But in the US, none of the states have actually introduced the limit requirement. I can run an online casino in the US and not provide my players the option to set the limit.
Well, unless it's mandated, no operator's going to do it, are they?
Also from a research point of view, we know that it helps, I would say, and if I am an operator and I communicate or I, make the impression of being very responsible, which most of the big players do, right? They come out with all those programs and this and that flyer and whatever, and positive play and stuff. I should at least do like the bare, minimum homework and comply with those RG tools, which we know are actually helping, that's the bare minimum.
Well, and obviously I know some operators have taken a proactive approach to offer those tools within their apps and being able to do that. But I think the U.S. still takes a very much, both from a regulatory sense as well as just a general overall sense of those tools are optional along the way. You may see states eventually, do that. I could see a Massachusetts coming in that just recently said, hey, if we're taking John off because he's a high roller and he's, going against us on the online books, why did you do that and have to disclose that? That's probably about the furthest you're going to have people go right now in the U.S. over everything, because we're still very much of a personal responsibility state.
I've got one last question for you.
Last?
Okay.
That's very dramatic.
Do you need a drum roll or...
dramatic announcement.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not so bad. So thinking about people that are active in RG, for want of another way to express it, people that are active in RG, people that are proponents of RG in whatever way they are, might be researchers, they might have a business that's relevant. There's all sorts of people out there who are shouting. There might be people with lived experience, of course. But people that are proponents of RG, as opposed to anti-gambling lobby, what can the proponents of RG, in your opinion, I don't even know if you can answer this, Brendan, but I have great faith in you. What can the proponents of RG do to get a seat at the table in those conversations when regulations are being brought about?
I don't know anybody that doesn't have the ability to have a seat at the table, as you say that.
Because, well, I don't.
Well, you're also not in the U.S., but, let's say you had a business.
That's discrimination, that is.
Oh, here we go, John. Let's say you had a business, though, okay, to be able to do that. In most of these processes around the country of saying, hey, we're going to write regs for X along the way, whether that be Nevada going and saying we're going to change it, whether it be Missouri that says, hey, we're going to launch online sports betting, it's very much an open and transparent process to say, here's the regs, you can comment, you can do this, you can talk to us, have the conversations along the way. And those have a host of people. Those have operators that are very much proponents. Those have those that are very much anti-gaming that are against it. And you have, as you so eloquently talked about, those that care about the RG issue that say, hey, either from a commercial standpoint because you have a business or from a philosophical standpoint as a researcher or anything else, hey, guys, here's the things that we believe are important to be able to include. And so there is that capacity to do that along the way in those open comment periods. And in some cases, you'll have people say, okay, we're going to bring together this group of stakeholders to be able to do it type thing. You know? So I think everybody has the ability. It's just a matter of when do they come into the process. No different than they have the ability, if I were to go legalize iGaming in a state today, to say, hey, we want to put, as Michael talked about, loss limits in place to be able to do that. They have every ability to go lobby on that behalf as the bill's being passed. So there is a capacity to do it. It's just different because of how we're structured from a government perspective and how we're structured from a regulatory perspective.
Well, thanks to that fantastically concise answer, I can ask you another question now, which is...
I think you said that was the last one.
Prediction markets.
There was such a dramatic ending.
Prediction markets, gambling or not?
I am sorry, but you cannot sit there and go and get a contract on what's going to happen on an NFL game and think that that is not gaming. You know, as I jokingly say to all of my friends, and I put that in quotes, that are now in this business, hey guys, I'm still waiting for be able to bet on the Orange Report, which is what you said when you're trading commodities through the CFTC.
Very fair.
Also have problems with the whole election side because in a lot of states, election betting is illegal.
Yeah, of course it is. But also, I mean, who doesn't want to place a bet on pork bellies?
Hey, I'm still waiting for the Corn Report as a Nebraska kid.
God, I love Trading Places. What a great movie.
It was a great, great movie. Randolph and Mortimer are like heroes to now today. Let's make them in charge. You know what? They need to be the figures for one of the prediction markets, you know?
God.
About the prediction markets, I mean, what's most popular there, I mean, in terms of predicting?
They're for the most part, is all where the revenue's at is all on sports.
Okay.
That said, politics probably comes in second. I had somebody try to explain to me that the insurance market is going to be great as you bet on weather. And as somebody that used to storm chase for fun, I'm like, there's no way you can actually do that right. Nobody knows what the hell they're doing. You know?
You can't just drop, I used to storm chase for fun, right at the end of a recorded conversation.
We can save that for the next one, John.
Oh, man.
You did that.
Yeah, you nothing wrong chase. With a good tornado chasing.
Because you are from Nebraska, are you?
Or yes, loved it. Miss it.
Is that like storm country there? Or
yes. Tornado Alley.
Tornado. Like when you hide in the basement. Like in
That's
the
what most people do. I'd go out and look for them.
Fucking hell.
Wasn't there like, didn't they had a remake of, what was the movie?
Twister.
Twister, exactly, yeah.
It was a sequel.
A sequel?
Yeah.
It wasn't very good
original.
Either.
I mean, the original is pretty good.
But the original was great. It had Bill Paxton in. You cannot go wrong with Bill Paxton.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Sequel has Glenn What's-His-Face in, and it wasn't all
Glenn
that.
Powell. Although yesterday I started watching The Running Man, the sequel, and it's really good. I liked it. It got lots of good dialogue. You know,
okay.
The sequel to the...
You have a new podcast you can start, John. Movies and how it relates to gaming.
Don't get me started.
And it's not
I'm
just the movie Casino.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm always doing it.
Don't start with that one. I mean, that's my favorite one.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I'm not sure how Twister works in, but I think there was a Twister slot at one point in time.
Oh yeah, there definitely was. So there were a few Hasbro ones. I think they were WMS machines. But also,
you know, this year when I was in Vegas, I had the impression those like branded, I mean, slots like they had before, like, you know, Big Bang Theory, Batman, Superman, those have kind of disappeared a little bit in the Vegas casinos.
Yeah, licensed slots, with one really clear exception, don't tend to do all that well, and the licenses aren't cheap. No pun intended, buying a license, unless it's an evergreen license, is a gamble. But it is, because if it's a movie that's coming out, you are taking a punt on that movie's success.
No,
like,
you are.
The Phantom Menace was very famously in profit before the movie was released because of all the licensing.
I'm sure a stitch slot would work very well, although, I mean, the target group is a bit...
A what slot?
Difficult. The Stitch, the Disney. But that's another thing, you know. I really sort of find alienating that lots of the slots have very, like, you know, motives that should appeal actually to kids and not adults, right?
But I wrote a column about this a while ago because I saw an advert while I was twatting around on Twitter the one day. I saw an advert for a Goonies slot.
Yeah.
Now, you can argue that's an evergreen license, because of course it is. The movie was what, 1985, 84, 85?
80-something, yeah.
But it is a movie that was aimed at, and the marketing was specifically aimed at children.
Yeah.
And that marketing is still effectively aimed at children, but it's also aimed at the adults who were kids at the time. And it opens up this Pandora's box that's just a complete nightmare. But yeah, what do I know? Nobody's inviting me to any RG conversations, are they, Brendan? No.
You're more than welcome to join any of the ones in the States.
Don't want to.
May 20th.
Go look at some of the comments that some of the RG groups made on CFTCs, and now they have egg all over their face. But that's a different story. We can save that for another one.
Okay. Brendan, thank you very, very much for joining us. We appreciate your company.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, gentlemen. Look forward to our next conversation.
This episode of Addiction, An Hour with Hour, is brought to you by Gaming Laboratories International. GLI is a world-class testing, inspections, and certification company committed to delivering the highest quality land-based, lottery, and iGaming testing and assessment services around the world. GLI provides suppliers, operators, and regulators with expert guidance for navigating the future of gaming and ensuring gaming innovations meet regulatory standards with confidence in more than 710 jurisdictions. For more information, visit gaminglabs.com.